All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Can you see it? Did you know this?
Check, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams Lee.
Here, like I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted them in and Valentine's Day.
Wow, we should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What I'll have. Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores.
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off-air, let's go.
Hello Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. My name is David Quadrelli, and I am joined, as always, by the man who built the place, Chris Faber. Chris, how are you doing on this Friday afternoon, an hour after our class just finished?
Good. I'm discovering LinkedIn. It seems like a pretty cool website. But I'm just still in a good mood from what happened on Thursday with the prospects. That was an incredible day for like three Canucks prospects, really. Obviously the big two ones in Nils Höglander and Vasily Podkolzin. But aside from that, it's been a good day. I had some homemade chicken strips last night for dinner, which were excellent. You know, a little shake and bake on some chicken tenders, and that was a delicious dinner. So I got a bunch left over, so I'm in a good mood because I know that I got to warm up some chicken strips later on. That's going to be a great day.
That is fantastic. Those are always good. And something you were asking me about last night when we were playing Warzone with Adam Gaudet, by the way. Let's talk about that, playing with Adam Gaudet. But what you were asking me is what the best appetizer is. And that was a tough one for me to answer, but I think we should have that conversation a little bit later in the show. Maybe we'll circle back on the whole appetizers things. But yeah, we played against Adam Gaudet yesterday, and the video went around of him shooting me out of the air. I don't even know how he hit those shots. It was just ridiculous. Like, PC players have such an advantage, and it's like insane how hard it is to play against them. That's why we don't like to play with Wyatt or JD, because they play on PC, so it's always tougher against those PC guys.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. We made like an all writers team of yourself, Wyatt, Cody Sievertson, and me, obviously, for a while there, and then we were mixing it up, and I think we came last out of the squads every single time. Like, there was people beneath us, like, that finished worse, but they were, like, teams of one or teams of two. But, like, as for teams of four, the team writers was absolutely horrible on the Adam Gaudette private lobby. But, yeah, like, it's so hard for console players to compete with the computer players. Like, we were watching, like, it shows you get to spectate other players. And they're doing, like, 720s as they're just, like, running down the road, like, just for fun. It's like, dude, I can't spin that fast. Like I don't know. I could. It was blowing me away. But, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And, yeah, Gaudette absolutely beamed you out of the air. Like, that was insane.
Man, and you know how I like to go to those towers, right? I went back and watched the stream, and I wanted to see what happened and maybe what I did wrong. You know, look at the game tape. Gaudette would be proud. And his teammates, like, yo, guy in the tower, and God's like, oh, okay, I got him, and he's, like, so calm, and he just runs up, looks at the tower, sees me jumping out, and just beams me. Like, I was like, oh, they're coming, I better run, and I was so far, I don't know how he hit me. Like, he was using a growl, so I switched to the growl after that game, and it's just, I can't hit the same amount of shots. It's ridiculous. I don't know.
I think he was using the kilo.
No, he was using growl.
I saw a bunch of people in the comments saying Kilo, but anyways, I don't think people don't want to hear us debate which gun they were using in Warzone, but it, like, actually looking at what Gaudette did the other day, like, that is so cool. We were kind of just, like, I wouldn't say freaking out, but we were just kind of, like, taken back of, like, what this year has brought, and the fact that we're playing Call of Duty now with a Canucks player, it's, like, it was just weird, but it was, like, so cool that Adam Gaudette's going out and doing this stuff, and shout out to Adam Gaudette. Like, you know, he's not, like, the biggest name player on the Canucks, but he's a pretty big part of this team, especially moving forward. And you see what he's doing on social media, and his wife as well, Michaela. Like, what they're doing with, even if it's just stupid TikToks. Like, I'm sure that they're not proud of every single TikTok they're putting out, but, like, they're putting out, like, fun content for us. And I think that that's so great, because fans just, you know, they're fans. Like, the word fans means fanatic, and people are fanatic about this team. I think that they would love to see a lot more Canucks players get involved in this. And Adam Gaudette's been doing a great job of, I think, going out there and putting himself on a stream, putting his wife on a stream, and, like, actually communicating with fans, getting involved with them. He's pretty active in the chat. So just, like, big shout out to Adam Gaudette in this pandemic, and specifically in the off season. Like, he's been really getting involved with the fans of the Vancouver Canucks and fans of him. So good for him creating that brand, I guess. It seems like a good way to grow a brand, I think, for a player.
Absolutely. And you like to see more and more players doing that. You look at Pettersson with the photo shoots and everything. But one thing about this whole Gaudette thing is, originally it seemed like he was going to come play with us. And I think that's still the plan. But after seeing us play yesterday and seeing where we landed on the scoreboard, I'm thinking we're about to get ghosted by Gaudette. I don't think he's going to want to play with us after that performance.
I don't know. I got him in the trap now. Like, people, like you send out some Instagram DMs to people, like celebrities sometimes, and you're never going to get a response, right? It's just going to be buried in there, whatever it is. Like, when people try and say to you, it's like a message request or whatever. So many celebrities and hockey players and professional athletes, they all have these, but he messaged me on Instagram, so, like, I got him now. So, like, when I send him, he's getting a notification, right? So, like, that's good. So, yeah, we got to set up a game where you and I link up with Gods and we play, because I think he plays on console as well, so we can stay away from those PC players a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to play with him, though, because what if we just crap the bet? He's never going to answer our questions in the room. We ask him questions, he's like, no, next question, these guys suck at Warzone.
Yeah, well, that's a story. The best thing I saw was somebody replied to the tweet when I sent out the video, and someone was just like, go write an article about that nerd after he blasted you. That was good.
Jeez, I wonder what he would have said if he knew it was me that he was shooting, if he would have said something like that. Oh, that would have been fantastic. But we should mention, and I totally forgot to, as I so often tend to do, Dan O'Connor is on this episode, and you had a nice chat with him. It's going to take up the bulk of the episode. Like we said, not a ton of news, but there is some stuff we do want to talk about, and I think we're done with the Warzone talk for now. But yeah, Dan O'Connor, that was a fun conversation, wasn't it, Chris?
Man, I think I said it at the end of the interview, but I was like, I looked down and I clicked because I was, you know, I have all my tabs open with some questions and some information to help, you know, ask questions to Dan. And then I clicked to the recording file that I was using with the program, and I click it and I'm like, I wonder if I'm at 30 minutes yet. And I look and I'm over an hour. So I was like, oh, I was like, I should probably shut this down pretty soon. Dano's the man. Like, he's so much fun to talk to. He's one of the nicest guys around Vancouver hockey, and he's got a really great story of where, you know, how he got to the point that he's at right now. And, you know, a couple little things. I asked him a couple Canucks questions. We asked a little bit about Victor Persson a little bit because he's coming over to the WHL. So there's a little bit of Canucks content in there as well, but just hearing Dan's story is a lot of fun, and I hope people enjoy it. We're going to finish off the episode with it after we just kind of do our little opening skit here. We'll talk about a few things because there is some stuff I definitely want to get to with the prospects. So we'll get into that a little bit. But yeah, we're going to close out the episode with, I think it's an hour and 7 minutes, just myself and Dan. And I think we're going to start to do a couple of these into the future. Like, it might be me talking to someone, it might just be you talking to someone, it might be both of us having a conversation and putting it on the episode. But if there's not a ton of news, it's kind of cool to like hear the story of how people got into what job they're doing. So we'll expand into those a little bit, but as soon as news breaks, we're definitely going to bring that to you guys, whether that's on, you know, a podcast that we have to do because of an emergency or something. Like, if big news drops, we're definitely going to kind of come out to it. But at the same time, we're down to one show a week because there's just not a lot going on right now. And it's going to be a slow, I'd say probably next like 4 weeks, which isn't bad. Like, it's not actually that far away. But I think before we start to hear real news about training camps and when the season's actually starting up, because they're aiming for January 1st. Like, I don't see that happening personally. But yeah. I didn't see them going through the bubble without a COVID case either. So they kind of shocked me in that way. And if they have a same plan and they execute it the same way that they did with the bubble, like, more power to them. And I think this is something we talked about when they were going into the bubble, was like, the NHL is going to have to prove to a lot of people that they're able to do this and get back to play. And I think they did that with the playoff bubble. So I think that they have to give them the benefit of the doubt. And I'm iffy to believe if it's actually going to happen on January 1st, but man, they knocked it out of the park with what they did with the playoff bubble, so maybe they're able to do something similar with January 1st start date.
Well, we know they don't want to do bubbles, rather they want to do hubs. So you'll stay in a city, and they're just going to try and minimize the travel, right? So they'll have, like, my understanding of it is they'll have, like, 4 teams in one city, right? And then those teams will play like 12 games against each other, and then they'll travel to the next city. So again, like, I don't want to say any of this as fact because nothing's set in stone yet, but from what we've been hearing from the Board of Governors meetings and everything else going on, like, yeah, they want to go as early as January 1st. Those were the words they used. But again, like, you and I both know, they've got to have a training camp. There's players in Europe, there's players in the States who have to respect a 2-week quarantine. Right now, we know Thatcher Demko's here, Zach McEwen's here. Pettersson didn't go home to Sweden. He stayed here the whole time, so he's here as well. Troy Stetcher's here, not that it matters much to Canucks fans, but he's still here till he has to go to Detroit for training camp. Breaks your heart, but that's who's here right now. I don't think I'm forgetting anybody. I know Besser went back home, obviously, to be with his parents. But yeah, like a guy like Besser, he's got to come in, he's got to quarantine for 2 weeks, and then he's got to go into training camp. So if you're doing that, like you know, training camp in July was 2 weeks, right? Like, it was 2 weeks of time. So if they're thinking of doing that, players theoretically have to come in the middle of December. They're going to miss Christmas after doing this bubble thing, and then they're going to go into a very uncertain season. Like, I don't know.
Well, they would have to come back at the start of December.
Say that again?
Well, they would have to come back at the start of December, do the 2-week quarantine, and then do 2 weeks of camp.
Yes.
That's why true. I think we're about a month away from really knowing what's going on. Because if players are coming back, you know, we'll know in kind of like 3 weeks right now, 2 or 3 weeks, which is crazy.
I didn't even think of that. You're right. They'd have to come back at start of December if they're, yeah, exactly. Well, like, yeah, I guess I was thinking more so of the players, you know, I think the majority of their players, like, are still in Canada. Like, I know Beagle, Sutter, Horvat, well, I guess Miller's in the States. Yeah, I guess it's not really a majority. I think it's going to be about 50-50.
I would say the other way. I would say there's a majority of them not in Canada, probably.
Well, Edler's still here. Louis, I don't think Louis went back home. I don't know. We don't know where everybody's at right now. Like, we know Quinn Hughes went home. I don't want to go through the whole roster and say if they're still here or not. But, yeah, you're right. There's going to be players who have to come back at the start of December to, get their 2-week quarantine done. And that's another thing, like, with cases so high, I don't see a world where they even think about bending the rules. Oh, you're a professional athlete? Sure, we can bend the rules for you. Like, no, I don't think that's going to happen. Like, you know, cases are rising here, but they're still high where a lot of these players are coming from, right? So, I really don't see that being the case. Like, people want to see them bend the rules for an athlete. I don't think that's going to happen right now, just with the current climate and everything going on. Like, I can't see that happening.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think they will bend the 2 weeks. It's just, I think that's a provincial rule, right, for British Columbia. And so it's crazy, and I'll kind of transition this to prospects a little bit because it does affect one of them. We're actually 1 month away. The date that we're recording this right now, we're 1 month away from Nils Höglander's loan expiring with Regla. So he's stated to play his final game on December 12th. He gets released from the loan on the 13th of December. So if he's released on the 13th of December, let's say he flies out on the 13th, right? He gets here, he has to quarantine for 2 weeks before even getting to training camp. So he misses at least a week of training camp if they're aiming to go January 1st. So all these people that are really hoping that Nils Höglander has a chance of making this team, and a lot of these same people are thinking that the NHL season is going to start January 1st. Unfortunately, that doesn't give Nils Höglander a lot to show the coaching staff from what he's going to be able to do on this team, because he's going to miss a lot of camp if he gets here on the 13th or the 14th. And, you know, then he has to quarantine for 2 weeks. We're looking at the 28th, 27th. Like, that's when he's going to be able to start competing. Mm-hmm. And they want to start January 1st. You're not even going to get a chance to see Nils Höglander at training camp, really. So, it's a crazy situation, obviously, and nothing's set in stone right now. But it might be better, specifically for the Nils Höglander truthers out there, if the season is pushed back, even to something like January 15th. And actually, you know what? Like, you'll get to it later in this conversation, but we have a pretty decent... We open up with it when I talk with Dan O'Connor. We talk a lot about COVID and what the WHL season is like coming back. So let's leave the COVID talk here, and let's talk about that prospect a little bit in Nils Höglander, because himself... Dmitry Zlodiev and Vasily Podkolzin all had 2 points on Thursday. I think the highlight of all of them, and I'll ask you if you agree with this or not, was that assist from Nils Höglander, though.
Yeah, dude, the way he controlled the zone, like, that's the kind of, I don't know, like, you see assists, like, even the one Podkolzin did, right, where it's, like, a secondary assist, or it's like, oh, well, the guy was wide open, and it was an easy tap-in, he just found him, but... Höglander was creating space, right? And when you're doing that, that shows me that you have the confidence, not only in the SHL, but that you could come to the NHL and potentially be a guy who has the offensive capabilities to just, you know, wheel a puck into the zone with confidence, right? And I mean, he probably won't have as much time and space as he does in the SHL when he gets to the NHL. But man, it's just good to see that kind of confidence from a young player like that.
Oh, definitely. And you're starting to see a little bit more confidence. And it's not like he's getting a ton of minutes either, right? Like, you look at his last few games, he only has one of them of his last, you know, like, 7 games over 15 minutes. So he's not getting a lot of time, but he's making the most of it over the past few games. He had that six-game run where he had 0 points in any of those games after a great start to the season. But you look at it, 5 points in his last 5. He's got 2 goals and 2 assists in his last 3 on a 3-game point streak right now. So, you know, the kid's starting to heat up and he's starting to get some luck go his way. I was tweeting about this like crazy as the SHL break was on. I'm like, he's just like, he seriously feels like Nils Höglander was snake bitten. Like, he wasn't, it's almost like specifically the way that I have to watch these prospects. It's like, I really don't care much about what the game's going on. Right. Like when the game's going on and Nils Höglander is not on the ice, I care. If a player sticks out, I'll watch him. But at the same time, like, I'm here to watch Nils Höglander. So when I'm watching them play, I'm specifically watching him. I'm watching where the puck's going. I'm watching where rebounds are going. I'm watching where passes are going. And it just felt like for a while there, specifically in that 6-game stretch, or even extending it too, like, there was like an 8-game stretch after that 4 points that he had in the first 2 games. But, like, it just felt like the puck was not bouncing towards him. It wasn't getting past to him in certain spots from his teammates. Like, it was just a lot of stuff going in the other direction and not really going his way. So I think looking at it now, like, a couple things finally went his way, which is good to see. And from there on, we're just going to see what happens. You know, he's got to continue to put up points here. And if he does, I think that gives him a better shot of making the Canucks. But like I just mentioned earlier, you know, if he's not able to compete in a full training camp, that makes it real tough to put him into the Canucks roster. And the thing that's best going for him right now to make this team is for him to go to training camp, because this kid's unreal at training camp. We're starting to see some of these post-game interviews from Ragland get tweeted out, and like the players are like, I think I saw a quote the other day where it was just like, with when you're playing with Niels, you just have to be able to keep up. He's an absolute machine on the ice or something like that. And like, that's true. And that was the same thing that we heard from all the guys at the prospects camp, was all of them were just raving about the Swedish kid. Like, he was unreal. The small Swedish kid was just incredibly skilled. So I think the best shot of him making this team and actually playing is for him to be at a full training camp. So the fact that his loan ends on the 12th and we could see NHL players potentially coming here on December 1st to do that 2-week quarantine, it definitely hurts his chances. If everything actually runs to the date that they want it to happen, it hurts his chances if he's not able to compete.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. And it's going to be interesting. He's going to be a guy we watch at training camp. And there's a few that we're going to be watching at training camp. People have heard us talk about it on this show before. And I mean, there's Vasily Podkolzin as well, who's not going to be at training camp. But that's another guy who's been playing with a ton of confidence since the Karhala Cup in Finland. And man, getting some first-line minutes with Ska in the KHL. And just like, I don't know, it felt nice because I think you and I were both saying for a while there, like, he's just, like, free pods. It wasn't for nothing. Like, hashtag free pods wasn't just us being funny. Like, we were legitimately saying, like, if you give this guy some more opportunity, he will succeed. And then you have all the people saying, oh, Jake Virtanen's great, but Vasily Podkolzin, no, he's not good. He's not good. He can't even score at the KHL level. So, I don't know. Like, it was nice to make those people eat their words a little bit when we saw Podkolzin come out and have the performances he did. But I'll let you talk about that since you wake up at, like, 3 a.m. to watch all his games.
Yeah, I'll be up at 6 tomorrow for his game. But, like, the free pods movement is not over. Like, he's on the first line, but he didn't get any time on the power play. He didn't get any time shorthanded. Those are where he's going to do some of his best work, and that's where he's going to score a lot of his goals, is on the power play, because he's so electric in front of the net, and he's always moving around the net and still being a great net front presence. Like, that's where he's going to score a lot of his goals and get a lot of his points, is when he's on that in front of the net, when he's rotating the right side, passing it to Petey. Like, that's where he's going to put up a lot of his points. And I think that, yeah, he played 12:55. He was a first-line guy, skating with Marchenko, who he's got a lot of chemistry with. They obviously had a great start to the season when they were on that fourth line with him and Morozov. But now he's playing with Lindenvay and Marchenko on the first line. He's getting a lot of opportunities. Unfortunately, he's not out there killing penalties, and it's so crazy to say, because though this is kind of contradictive to what I said earlier about Nils Höglander and how I only really watch him, like, I do watch the games, and I see the way that the rest of Ska and their players, specifically their wingers, the way that they forecheck, and they're just, it's not the same like Podkolzin. Like, the way that Podkolzin forechecks is just electric, and he just feels like the guy that you, when I look at all of those wingers playing on Ska, I just think that Podkolzin would be the best penalty killer out of the group. He blocks so many shots. He does a great job of that. He's not afraid to get involved physically. He almost dropped the gloves with, do you remember Washington Capitals player Alexander Semin?
Semin.
Okay, I always said Semin because I thought it was a funny joke. But anyways, Alexander Semin, like, he almost dropped the gloves with him, who's now the captain. I think he's like 36 years old. He's the captain of Vityaz, I think is his name of the team. Probably not pronouncing it right. But he almost dropped the gloves with him because Semin high-sticked Podkolzin. And this is right after he scored his goal. And then he drew a penalty right after that because Semin high-sticked him. And then he kind of got in Podkolzin's face after, slashed him a little bit. They were about to drop the gloves if the ref didn't get involved. And it's just like, you see that, and it's like, everyone's all excited about the goal and the assist, but like, I see something like that, and I just get way more excited for this kid, even if it's not something that's on the score sheet. And that's the problem that I think a lot of people have, is the score sheet has to be, you know, score sheets aren't scouts, but for some reason, a lot of people think they're scouts from looking at score sheets. So, I don't know, it just kind of pisses me off to see it, because I know that this kid's going to be impactful, I know the goals are going to come, and I think that it was a tough stretch for both these players of these top prospects, but the little bit of confidence that he got from the Karjala, I think that that's great for him moving forward. And if he is going to stick on the first line, like, dude, they just won 8-1. That's the biggest win of Ska's season. There's no chance. If Valeri Bragin switches, and he's the coach for Ska, if he switches the lineups, I don't care about COVID. I'm getting on a flight, and I'm handling the situation. I'll leave it at that.
Patreon content, Valeri Bragin versus Chris Faber, one-on-one.
Oh, yeah, I'll meet you in the gulag, bud.
They actually have one. Oh my gosh, we shouldn't say that. We have Russian listeners on this show. I don't know if you've seen our numbers in Russia, even on Canucks Army. Probably with how much we talk about Podkolzin on there. But Matt, we've got a decent amount of listenership and readership in Russia. Like,
well,
I think you
heard who is a celebrity, right? You heard on the VanCast, Drancer was saying that Rick Dhaliwal is a celebrity over there in Russia.
You're next. You're next, man. You're next.
Yeah, I'm in Dhaliwal's shadow once again.
Love it. Love it. Well, I mean, if there's not too much else to add, we could go to Dan O'Connor. I mean, I was kind of throwing the idea out there to talk about the most memorable goal you've seen.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I think that's a good title for the episode, too. It's just the most memorable goal for the Canucks. Like, okay, the answer is quite clearly the Dragon Slayer goal. And Jason Drudy had a really good article for Canucks Army counting down the top 10 most important goals in the franchise's history. Obviously, the Dragon Slayer is the big one, right? Like, if Burrows doesn't score that goal, the whole core gets torn up. It's just instant rebuild mode, and they wouldn't have been given another shot. Maybe looking back on it, that would have been the best thing for them. But, you know, there's a lot of jobs on the line, and Burrows saved a lot of jobs with that goal, the Dragon Slayer goal. And I'll let you talk about this one, because when we were talking about our moments, this is the one that you were actually there for.
Yeah, this is by far the biggest goal that I was ever at and saw in person. We were at that game. It was the best Christmas present, it was the best birthday present I ever got. And one of my buddies had a similar birthday, and our moms got us that together to go and watch this game. And it was incredible from start to finish. I remember just, you know, being 18 and getting served alcohol was like the great start to the game. Didn't even get ID'd at the time because I looked like a 30-year-old when I was like 15. So anyways, I didn't get ID'd, so we got drinks for like the whole game, which was awesome. And then when the goal actually went in, my friend Joey, he was a very small, like not small, he's very skinny. He's a skinny dude. He picked me right up off the ground and like lifted me up in the air and like twirled me like a ballerina, and we like, the place was nuts. I just remember it was absolutely insane in the arena. Like, you could just feel the whole place like shaking. And then when the game finished, we were grabbing towels, right? Because we're like, oh, we want to bring some of these towels back. And there's a bunch in the seats, and we were taking extra towels because we're like, oh, we want to keep these, you know, the white towels that they wave, right? So we were grabbing a bunch of these towels, and we were bringing them back with us. And we found a Boston Bruins jersey on the ground somewhere, like a Boston Bruins jersey. And this is sort of like an omen looking forward to what happens, because they end up losing to the Bruins, obviously, in 2011. And my friend Joey takes home the Boston Bruins jersey and gives it to his buddy who is a Bruins fan. So that was kind of crazy, but I remember hitting the streets and it was insane. Like, there was just bottles, and to think that this was happening, and now that we're in a COVID world, it's so strange, but like, there was bottles of like vodka and like rum, like all this hard liquor. Just like, you would just be walking on the street, someone would just like hand you a bottle of liquor, like beers and like everything. It was absolutely insane. Like, I was pretty young at the time and I didn't know much about downtown Vancouver, and I was just like, damn, downtown Vancouver is crazy. Like, people just like giving you alcohol wherever you are on every corner and stuff. But like, it was a crazy night. It was definitely like probably the best night of my life, I'd have to say. It was absolutely insane. So I agree with that being the biggest goal in Canucks history, just because of the fact that I was there at that was pretty unreal.
So the one that I was at that kind of sticks out to me the most, and it's funny because this was in the dark years. Like, we were talking about who was on the ice for this goal. It was Bo Horvat's first goal, and I won it in English class. You know, I'm a big Scrabble player, right? Like, I love playing Scrabble. You know, play all the time with my family. So in grade 9, English honors, okay, not a big deal, I was in class, and my teacher wrote 3 words on the whiteboard, okay? And she was like, I'm going to give you all 1 minute to unscramble these words, these 3 words, and you can use all the letters in these 3 words, and you can create as many words as you can. Whoever is the most wins tickets to the Canucks game tomorrow night. And they were playing Anaheim. And I instantly was like, all right, well, I have to win this. So I just like got in the zone. I put down 46 words in a minute. Like, I don't know how I did this, because I don't think I could do it now, but I put 46. And then the person who was like second in the class, like, it was like me at 46, and then the next person was like, I think like 29, and someone had 28, then there was like a 26, but it was just like this huge jump, and I was like sweating, okay, because it was only a minute, and I was just going, like, I was going so fast. I finished all of them, and then, yeah, so I won the tickets, which was great, and then Yeah, I went with my friend Chris, so I think you've met... I think we just played Warzone with him. But anyways, Chris isn't, like, a huge Canucks fan, but he's a very... He's a casual Canucks fan. Like, he knows what's going on. Like, he watches Pettersson and all them. So, yeah, we went to that game, and this is in the dark years, right? So, like, I was explaining to Chris, I'm like, okay, so, yeah, like, this is Bo Horvat. He's the future captain of the team. Like, he's great. He's really, really good, but, you know, they don't have much else around him. So... on this line with him, when he scored his first goal against Anaheim, and again, like, the seats were the worst part. Like, they were right in front of where Murph does his intermission, like, panels or whatever. So, like, yeah. Worst seat in the house. But, you know, there's not really a bad seat in Rogers Arena, I like to say. It's always, you can always kind of see what's going on. But anyway, not the best seats. We're sitting there. Horvat scores this goal, and I was like, oh my gosh, Bo Horvat, like, this is the first of many, and I was so happy. Like, I really liked Bo Horvat when I was a kid, for sure, and yeah, and I was just looking back on it before we hit record here, and the people on the ice for that goal were Derek Dorsett, Zach Cassian, and then Alex Edler and Kevin Bieksa, and it was so funny to me, just like, I was like, wow, that was, like, the second line. Like, that was not good. And then Horvat had a stint with Ronald Kennens, and then Willie D, Tank Commander Willie, on the bench. And it was just, yeah, like, it was the dark times of the Vancouver Canucks. But still, that's the one that stands out the most to me. The captain of the squad scoring his first career goal as a 19-year-old. It was cool to see, man. It was cool to see live, because you could tell there was, like, that sense of hope with Bo, you know, like mm-hmm. people cheered a little louder for that one than they would if the Sedin scored, or if, you know, Zach Cassian scored. Like, there was that little shred of hope that maybe Bo could become something. And then, yeah, like, the season after, plays with Berchi, and then Besser comes at the end of the year, and they do that whole line together. So, yeah, like Bo was a beacon of hope for the organization. Before there was Elias Pettersson, there was Bo Horvat. I can't believe I talked about this goal in the 2016 or 2015 season. Or 2014-15, actually, that was when it happened. I was in grade 9. But I can't believe I just talked about this for 6 minutes, and you spent, like, 3 minutes on the Dragon Slayer goal.
Well, no, it was dark times, man. You can talk about dark times easily. It's funny, as we're about to throw to the interview, I think I asked Dan what the most incredible game he ever saw with, like, a single player having a performance in one game was. And you guys will hear it in the interview, but he talks about a game that he was watching at the Memorial Cup when the Giants were there. And he saw a game where the Halifax Mooseheads, that's what they're called, right? I'm always with the teams are. I thought so. Okay. So this is when Nate MacKinnon was playing for them. And this is how Nate MacKinnon became the number one pick in the draft that he got drafted in. Because Nate MacKinnon in the final, who was playing against Seth Jones's team, and he ended up having... So they ended up winning 6-4 in that final game with an empty net goal that Nate MacKinnon wasn't on the ice for. But the five goals that they scored prior to that... Nate MacKinnon scored three of them and had primary assists on two of them. And he said that Nate MacKinnon was on an absolute other level in that game. So you guys will hear that story from Dan O'Connor a little bit later. And we should probably send to it, but you're hosting, so I'll let you do this.
Yep, let's do that. I think we're not even going to come back after, so we're going to throw to some ads. And then we're going to finish off the episode with some talk with Dan O'Connor. Great interview by Chris here. So thank you, everybody, for listening to episode 117 of the Canucks Conversation. And now here is Dan O'Connor of the Vancouver Giants. And before we go any further, just wanted to give a quick shout-out to the presenting sponsor of the Canucks Conversation podcast, Zephyr Epic, Canada's source for trading card games and sports cards. We open a lot of hockey cards from them, and you can too. You can use promo code CanucksConvo for $5 off your order. They ship free anywhere in Canada on orders over $50, so take advantage of that. Again, that is promo code CanucksConvo at ZephyrEpic.com, Zephyr Epic, on all platforms, on Twitter, Instagram, and join them on Twitch every Thursday for weekly case break giveaways. Chris and I have a lot of fun doing these. You guys should check them out as well. We've been having a lot of luck. We opened a lot of Quinn Hughes cards, and now we're doing the DiPietro diving. You can catch us on Twitter and Instagram opening hockey cards at random times. It's really hard to find out when we're going to do it because we don't really know when we're going to do it. But be on the lookout for that and make sure you go buy yourself some hockey cards, whatever cards you need, from Zephyr Epic, Zephyr Epic, on all platforms.
And before we go any further, just want to give a quick shout out to one of the sponsors of the Canucks Conversation, Mike's Heart Lemonade. And if you guys are looking for a zero sugar, zero carbs, and also 7% vodka drink, look no further than Mike's Harder Zero. They have three different flavors right now, lemon, lime, and cherry, with apparently more flavors just around the corner. So with zero sugar, zero carbs, natural flavor, and 7% vodka, this crisp vodka soda packs the perfect amount of juicy, tart flavor with a bit more vodka. So you only got to drink two of these to get drunk, Quads. That's exciting for you.
All right, guys, and joining me now, the voice of the Vancouver Giants and also co-host of the Voice and the Coach podcast, Dan O'Connor. Dano, how you doing?
Doing very well. Really appreciate you having me on the show, and you know, busy day for both of us. Lots of excitement out there, and yeah, looking forward to beginning the conversation.
Absolutely, and I know it's going to start being a lot more busy days for you with the WHL having a set date now. Is it January 8th they're looking for?
Yeah, for sure. That's certainly where all of this is heading. You know, certainly with the situation being ever-changing in not just British Columbia, but in, you know, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Washington, and Oregon, we're all pulling the same rope together, trying our very best to make sure that we're ready to go for January 8th. And I'd say that all of us collectively are feeling encouraged and optimistic that that's can and will happen, and it's just going to be a matter of making sure that we can, you know, collectively all do our part, and you know, with all the restrictions that are currently in place, it's buying into what we're told to do, and hopefully before too long we can have hockey again.
Yeah, most definitely. I think a lot of people are excited to get the Giants back in action for sure, and you know, to look at it from the other side of it, I'm curious what it was like for you, you know, as we were going through the WHL shutting down last season. Like, what was that kind of like for you, and specifically the job that you do with the Giants? I mean, you're involved with the players at all time, not only the play-by-play, but behind the scenes as well. So what was that kind of like when the news, I guess, came down? Was it a similar time, like when Rudy Gobert started testing positive, and then the NBA shut down NHL, and then I think junior hockey was a little bit after that, right?
Yeah, for sure. So the timeline, you're bang on. It was so early that week, so we're probably talking like March 9th, in and around there, we started to hear word out of Washington State that the Seattle Thunderbirds were going to have a game with no fans in the stands. And that game on the Saturday was going to be against us. And so we started to look into this a little bit more, and there's the hockey side of you that's thinking, wait, we have to go to Seattle and we don't have to endure those loud, rabid, crazy fans. This is awesome. This is really going to benefit the Vancouver Giants. And then, you know, you start to look at the actual logistics of this where, you know, I think there was something in place where there could only be, you know, maybe 100 or less people in the entire building. And then you're thinking, okay, well, how are we going to feed the team a post-game meal after the game? Like, what is this going to look like? How are we going to feed a team before the game in Washington on the way? Like, are we going to be able to stop at a restaurant? What's this all going to look like? So we were all trying to wrap our head around that. And then all the while, you know, you're seeing all these news updates and cases are starting to become a little more prevalent. And then all of a sudden, Rudy Gobert and the Utah Jazz, you know, take the floor only to have a game canceled right before they're, you know, they're about to tip off. And then all of a sudden you're thinking, oh boy, if sports are shutting down, this is not going to be good news for anybody. And then the Thursday, which would have been Thursday the 11th of March, went into the rink and the NHL announced that they were pausing their season. We got word that the WHL was going to be doing the exact same thing, and I think it was around 1 o'clock that the league officially paused its season. We told all the players to head home and to, you know, lay low for a weekend while we got all the facts straight and together with all of this. And we haven't had a hockey game since. The last game the Giants played was in Prince George on the 7th of March, and it
it feels like forever because it has been forever since we last played. But it went from trying to plan a road trip for a game without any fans to I don't know when the next road trip is going to be for the Vancouver Giants, and that's still sort of true even today.
Absolutely, and I found it, you had a conversation a few episodes ago, or actually just one episode ago on episode 20 of your show, the Voice and the Coach podcast, you had Cam Hope on, and I found it interesting the way that he was talking about, you know, when they said goodbye to their players in the Royals organization, and you weren't really sure when you were going to see them again. What's it been like for you? I mean, with some of these 20-year-olds moving on, you've been around these guys for a couple of years. Like, what's the relationship been like for you guys? Have you talked to them at all since the season kind of shut down?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, when you look at junior hockey and the real big scope of all of this, the major letdown for everybody is the fact that the 20-year-olds had the worst go of this because they didn't get to leave on their terms. Yeah. They didn't get to have the fans applaud them at the end of a game. They didn't have to, you know, they weren't named the three final stars of the final home game, as is tradition to do with the 20-year-olds sometimes. And, you know, for David Tendick, Milos Roman, and Tyler Pazuzu, the three 20-year-olds for the Giants, I was lucky enough to be able to chat with all three. You know, once the season was canceled for good, I spoke to all three individually and did our best on the Vancouver Giants website to profile all three and to do a sort of a tribute to all three guys, just a congratulations on a great career type of thing. And for Roman and for Tendick, two lifelong Giants, two guys that were just instrumental in their success and their run to the finals back in 2019. It was really emotional and tough to say goodbye to those two. And then, you know, for Tyler Pazuzu, sure, he's a new Giant, but, you know, here's a guy who he had the most games played of any active WHL player before the season ended. You know, so a 20-year-old who played parts of five seasons with Medicine Hat and then gets traded to Vancouver, doesn't get a final playoff series, doesn't get, you know, a chance to get closure on his terms. So it was definitely difficult. You could tell that, you know, their teammates and younger players, that was a major reason for the sadness really throughout the league, is just not getting the 20-year-olds their send-off that they deserved.
Yeah, most definitely. It's definitely a tough situation. And even moving into now, like, we don't really know what the situation is going to really look like come January anyways. But we're all hoping for the best. We're hoping to get back to it. I think we'll leave the negative behind us. Let's move into some positive talks a little bit. I hate talking about COVID no matter what it is.
Yeah, it's crazy how it just occupies so much of the conversation, you know, whether it's with family, whether it's with friends, whether it's with colleagues and coworkers. It's hard to avoid it just with the day and age.
Absolutely. Well, let's move to a positive note. Something that we talked about kind of before we started recording was, one of the things that I love about your show is that you don't have to break down so much of the, you know, your show doesn't rely on news similar to mine does. You actually get to tell a lot of these stories of the guests that you have on. And I kind of wanted to hear your story a little bit, Dan, because I found it so interesting, you know, kind of learning about you, the way that you came up through the ranks and through junior hockey. I'm wondering if you can just let us know how it all started for you. And more specifically, I want to know, when was the first time you actually did play-by-play for a hockey game, and where did it kind of go from there?
Well, I mean, there's probably two answers to that. I mean, the first hockey game play-by-play I probably ever did was to NHL 96 on a Sega Genesis back when I was about 10 years old, probably. But no, you know what, for me, and I'll try to keep this brief, I've been blessed and very lucky, I suppose, in that really for as long as I can remember, all I've ever wanted to do in my life is call hockey games. It was always the number one thing. I, of course, agree with playing hockey, and I always have played. But I kind of knew from an early age that I was never going to make the NHL with my skating or my slap shot, but heck, maybe I can make it with my brain and my voice. And so I would watch old hockey games. My dad was really good about, you know, recording old Edmonton Oilers games onto VHS tapes. And, you know, I would watch games and, you know, some people look at a piano for the first time and they can just play. Some people look under the hood of a car and they can just fix it. I could always just remember that Lee Fogelin wore number 2 and Yari Curry wore number 17. And it just, I was able to start retaining the information. And then, you know, you start to become a Canuck fan, and we'd go to Canuck games as a family, and I'd watch them on TV, or I'd listen to their games on the radio, and Jim Robson would do the play-by-play, and I would have a little radio in my bedroom, and I'd fall asleep, and I just always knew that that was something that I wanted to do, and those were steps that I wanted to follow. And so as I got older, enter junior hockey and the Vancouver Giants. So I would have been in the 11th grade when the Vancouver Giants were born. And living in Tawasin and growing up in Tawasin, the Giants went to the same high school as I did. And through just some connections through friends, I met Dale Sipe, who is the senior VP of the Vancouver Giants. He was then and he is now. And with his connection with the Vancouver Giants, it sort of became this thing where it's like, okay, you're a junior hockey fan. Well, do you want to come to a game? And do you want to practice your play-by-play? So we, you know, I would come and I would assist with the Giants game crew. I'd put the t-shirt on and I'd run around with Jack the Giant for a period or two. And then towards the end, he would say, okay, you're done. Go and find a corner somewhere and practice your broadcasting. So I was the kid that had a program and had a tape recorder, and I would practice calling the games. And so a year or two later, my family became a billet family for the Giants. So the connection only kind of grew. And as we started to welcome Vancouver Giants players into our house, this is when the team really started to win and contend for championships. So the excitement and the love of the WHL just kind of fostered from there. I went to the rink and I took my tape recorder and I practiced calling games. And then when I got accepted, and I did 2 years of journalism school through KPU. I was all set to go back, and then Columbia Academy at the time was located, you know, Broadway and Birch in Vancouver. It was a broadcasting school that accepted me on the spot. I did kind of an on-the-spot audition. They said, when can you start? Graduated from Columbia in July of 2006, and 2 weeks later I got offered a job and interviewed and got offered a job in Chetwynd, BC, which for those of you who don't know where Chetwynd is, it's 3 hours north of Prince George. So it's pretty darn remote, pretty darn northern, and pretty darn cold, especially for a city slicker like me that had never had to worry about snow tires on a car, never had to, you know, worry about inclement weather. But now all of a sudden I'm 21 years old and I'm living in northern BC making, gosh, it was my first paycheck wasn't anything to write home about. But part of the position was you know, hosting a midday morning show, or like a midday music show, doing some commercial production and doing play-by-play for the Junior B Dawson Creek Junior Canucks of the Northwest Junior Hockey League. So to make a real short story long, the first ever real hockey play-by-play that I ever did was in Dawson Creek at the Memorial Arena. It was a game between the Dawson Creek Junior Canucks and the Peace Air Navigators based out of Peace River. The Junior Canucks won the game 5-4, and a 20-year-old forward by the name of Jeff Taylor had 2 goals and 1 assist. The Junior Canucks won the game.
Unreal. Yeah, it's quite the story to get to that point, even just there. And I know there's a lot to come from there, because I wanted to kind of get into when you made the transition to, I believe it was the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League, right? So what's that like, kind of moving to a different part of Canada, let alone not just out of the province?
Well, so the very first time I visited the province of Saskatchewan was for my job interview. I had never been to Saskatchewan ever in my life. And you know, it's one of those things where you're in your early 20s. I was single at the time. I didn't really have any reason not to go. And for me, it was one of those things where, okay, I'm calling Junior B hockey. Well, the next logical step is to call Junior A. And when the Battlefords North Stars job came open, and you know, what an amazing place and what a phenomenal time in my life that was, because I you know, went out and bought a suit that I couldn't afford and flew out to the prairies to interview for the job. And I, you know, it's funny. Sometimes you just walk into a place and you feel like you're home. And from the instant I walked into that radio station in North Battleford, I just felt something felt right about it. And, you know, just the people I met, the interview went off without a hitch. And I just remember leaving the interview thinking, I got a really good feeling about this. And fortunately, my intuition was correct. I got the call the next day and got offered the job. So, you know, my dad and I load a U-Haul together and we make our way out to the prairies to start my Saskatchewan experience. And, you know, spent four years in the Battlefords calling hockey games for, you know, the Battlefords North Stars and the SJHL. Got to call some senior hockey games. I begged and I pleaded and I insisted that the radio station let me start my own weekly sports show. Finally, after about a year, they relented and they gave me 1 hour on a Monday night to have a sports show. It was called The Sports Fix. And, you know, here I am, 22 years old, living in Saskatchewan, and I'm still using my Dale Sipe connection with the Vancouver Giants to arrange guests for that show. I talked to Gordie Howe after his 80th birthday. I talked to Marcel Dion. I talked to Cito Gaston. I talked to every Saskatchewan Rough Rider you could possibly imagine. It was it was an amazing place. And, you know, being hungry, being enthusiastic, I'd like to think that I went into Saskatchewan with just a great work ethic and a great attitude. And I made it my mission to just work as hard as I could to, you know, hone my play-by-play craft, but also just embrace the city, embrace that experience. And, you know, fast forward 4 years, right on the cusp of when I left for Prince George, I still maintain to this day that leaving Saskatchewan and leaving that community was a remarkably difficult decision, and one that did not come easy. But of course, it's the way that it worked, and I have no regrets. But I'll always be very grateful for those 4 years in the Battlefords, because I think in so many ways it really shaped me as a broadcaster and as a person in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Now you must just laugh when people complain about the cold over here too.
Man, it's you know, I mean, I've lived in some pretty cold places when you think of Chetwynd and Prince George and North Battleford. I mean, people don't like driving around in the snow in Vancouver. Truthfully, I don't like driving around in the snow either, but I do laugh when I see that, you know, the city shut down with a little bit of snow in Vancouver, and I think, oh, this is nothing. This is nothing like minus 40 degrees in a wind chill, and you got to be up at 5 a.m. to go and do the morning sports.
Yeah, most definitely. I have a lot of family back in Saskatchewan. We went there for a funeral maybe 2 years ago, and I've never been before. And we landed, I think it was January was around the time. The first breath I took of air almost knocked me on my ass. I believe it's the first nighttime breath of air.
Like, people don't realize just how cold it is, because you don't have a ton of trees, mm-hmm. so you don't have much to really protect you from the wind. So and this is not very environmentally of me, so I apologize to our Green Thumb audience here, but it would be so cold that I would wake up at 4:30. I would start my car. I would pray that it would start, and it would, because I plugged it in with a block heater. I would go back inside. I would shower. I would have breakfast. And then right at about 4:55, I would get into my nice, toasty, warm car for my five-minute commute to the radio station.
Yeah, you're cruising at that point. That's a good feeling. I wanted to ask about the Sports Fix that you talked about.
And some of the guests that you have on. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, if you're going to come out with a new show or a new podcast, your first couple episodes have to be huge, right? Because that's when people are going to give you a chance. They're going to say, okay, I'll see this new project that's coming out. And you mentioned it. I think you've had Gordie Howe was the first guest you ever had on the show. Is that how it's said?
The very first guest ever. And I mean, I've been in the business now for 15 years, and not too many times have I, like, trembled before an interview. I mean, I've, you know, you've got a job to do, you got to be a pro, you've got a story to tell. I guess I don't get nervous easily in that kind of setting. I was beside myself.
Absolutely.
the 3 hours ahead of that phone call, you're kind of thinking to yourself, like, I can look like an idiot in front of my parents, I can look like an idiot in front of my friends, don't do anything stupid when you're talking to Gordie Howe. It's sort of how I was framing it in my mind.
Absolutely. And what did you think at the end of it? Did the nerves shake away once you started talking, or what?
Well, so here's the thing with Mr. Hockey. You know, the interview component of our chat lasted about 20 minutes. And, you know, he talked about, you know, some North Battleford memories. He grew up not far from there in Floral, Saskatchewan, just outside of Saskatoon. But, you know, we did our interview, and, you know, it ended. And I remember saying to him, like, okay, you know, Mr. Howe, thank you so much for taking the time. I don't want to keep you from everything else you have to do. And he's like, no. Like, tell me about your career. Tell me about what you're up to and where's the radio station. And so we did a 20-minute interview, but we talked for about 25 additional minutes just about life and about hockey. And, like, here I am, 23 years old, talking to Gordie Howe, the most popular hockey personality ever. Mm-hmm. And for half the conversation, if not more, he was more concerned, and he cared more about who I was and wanted to hear my story. I couldn't believe it. I was awestruck by the generosity and just how amazing that conversation was. And I kick myself to this day because I've never really been a hoarder. Like, I don't keep press passes. I don't keep, like, I've been horrible, actually, over the course of my career about keeping, keeping keepsakes from events that I've covered in this. Right. And unfortunately, I do not have the audio from that interview. And it definitely is a regret of mine in hindsight. And obviously, we lost him, you know, in the summer, you know, a few years back, and I'd love to listen back and hear that conversation, but definitely a career highlight for me and something that I'll be forever grateful for, you know, my half hour with Mr. Hockey.
Absolutely. Sounds incredible for sure. And I'd like to fast forward a little bit now. And I know you mentioned Prince George. We might skip past that a little bit because people want to hear about the Vancouver Giants and how that came. No offense to Prince George. I'm sure we have some listeners up there as well. But I wanted to hear, because you mentioned that your family was a Billet family. You guys were involved with the Giants. You went to high school with a lot of these guys. What was it like for you to get the opportunity? Like, when you heard that Brendan Batchelor got hired by the, I guess, Sportsnet or the Vancouver Canucks to do play-by-play for them, were you just thinking, like, I got to drop everything right now and I need to get that job as the play-by-play guy for the Giants?
Yeah, so a little bit of a Prince George shout-out. I mean, six years in PG, wouldn't trade those 6 years for anything. I met my wife there, and you know, I would say still in so many ways, Prince George, you know, is my home away from home, and Christmases and weddings and all of this stuff. Now, the Giants actually were quite influential for me to get the job in Prince George, because when the Cougar job came open, it was Dale Sipes, surprise, surprise, who got on the phone with me and said, like, yep, you should apply for this. I'll call them on your behalf, and I'll recommend your name. And so, got the job in Prince George, and, you know, experienced, you know, 6 unforgettable years and some pretty crazy highs and lows that went along with life in and hockey in that town. But yeah, so it was a Tuesday in the summer, and my wife and I were at the movie Dunkirk, and there must have been about 20 minutes left in the movie, and my phone in my pocket is going berserk. And I'm thinking, like, okay, like, these are text messages, they're not phone calls, like, I'll ride out the movie and see. Open up the phone when the movie's done, and I've got about 8 or 9 different people texting me saying that Brendan Batchelor is allegedly going to be, you know, the next voice of the Vancouver Canucks. The Vancouver Giants need a broadcaster, and, you know, please tell me you're going to apply, Dan. And, you know, my dad, you know, obviously is from the area and still lives in Cloverdale. I've got buddies, you know, all around the hockey world that were texting me, but, you know, my friends from home and, you know, the text messages come pouring in, and it's one of those things where I looked at my wife and just said, like, hey, you and I should go for a drink. I've got some news. And, you know, similar to Saskatchewan, I mean, it was one of those things where there was so much happening positively in Prince George that the decision to up and leave was anything but easy, to be honest. But like I do with most dilemmas in my life, I called Dale Sipe, and I kind of said, Dale, we've had this conversation a few times over the years, but is it time for me to come and work for the Vancouver Giants? And, you know, he kind of sheepishly said, Dan, I think it might be time. So here's who you need to call. This is what you need to do. And the rest is history. You know, a few phone calls later and some back and forth and, you know, some heartfelt conversation, you know, some tears and, you know, the trust and support of my family, I happily accepted, and I happily became the voice of my boyhood hockey team, the Vancouver Giants.
It's pretty unreal, Dan. It's a pretty unreal story. And I want to ask a little bit about your time with the Giants as well now, because the move to the LEC, I'm curious what that was kind of like for you.
Well, yeah. So when I started in the WHL, the Giants still played out of the Coliseum, and the Pacific Coliseum will always hold a special place in my heart and in the hearts of many. It's funny, I get flooded with these old Facebook memories. Yeah. And, you know, so I go back to 2011, and so many of my statuses are like, back to the Pacific Coliseum for another Cougars Giants game. Like, maybe this will be the game where we can finally win a game here. And it took 2 full seasons of going to the Coliseum and getting our lunch handed to us by the Vancouver Giants, but finally got to call a win there and finally got to call a victory at the Pacific Coliseum, which, gosh, might have been like December of 2013 when I finally got that dreaded monkey off my back. But then when the Giants moved to the Langley Event Center, that was my final year in PG. So I got acquainted with the building and called a few games there. And I admit it felt weird, you know, coming back and not going into East Vancouver, you know, staying at a hotel in Langley and going to the LEC for games. It felt different. But then when I got hired on, and then I spent 5 minutes at the LEC as an employee of the Vancouver Giants. And I say this, it's going to sound, you know, biased, but I don't really care. I love the Langley Event Center. I think from a facility standpoint, I think from a staff standpoint, I think from an atmosphere standpoint, the LEC is a treasure. It is a great, great place for junior hockey. And I think about the crew and the people associated with it who do just a phenomenal job with the webcasting, a terrific job from a fan experience standpoint. It's got everything you need. And I say this knowing that, you know, we did do a few games at the Pacific Coliseum for Teddy Bear Toss, right, 2 years ago. We did the Teddy Bear Toss this year at Rogers Arena, which was unbelievable. And yet, the LEC for me, I think to me, it's absolutely one of the best facilities for junior hockey in the WHL. And I think the playoff run of 2019 exposed that because I just remember some of the games and I get goosebumps talking about it, but just the noise and how loud that building felt when the Giants were marching their way towards game seven. I've got a lot of time for the people and the building of the LEC.
I remember listening. I worked at the mill. I was working a lot of night shifts at the time during that run. I remember you calling some big goals and having to like pull the headphone out of my ear because it was so damn loud in a couple of those for sure. And I just find it interesting because it's something that gets talked about, I guess, with some other sports teams. But having the Vancouver Giants out in Langley, how do you feel that fit kind of is, Dan?
Yeah, it's definitely a popular topic of conversation. I think I'm going to toe the company line a little bit here, and I'm just going to say that, the decision to shift from the Coliseum to Langley, it wasn't made, it wasn't made recklessly. It wasn't made, it wasn't a knee-jerk thing to do. A lot of market research, a lot of stones were turned over to really make sure that it would be a viable decision. And I think if you look at just where the world is trending, and I think if you just look at kind of the landscape of BC, the young families that are living, in Langley and in Abbotsford and in the Surrey area and Pitt Meadows and Maple Ridge and these communities that are a stone's throw away from the LEC, I think in a lot of ways the decision to move to Langley makes sense. Now, would it be better to have a SkyTrain station near a rink? Yes. Would it be better to, you hear people complain all the time about the drive from Vancouver to Langley is so annoying and that's deterring me from going. Well, so it takes 45 minutes to get anywhere, really, in the lower mainland with just how traffic goes. Look, the Coliseum is a special place. I totally get the appeal of being in Vancouver, and I appreciate that's, that's where the roots are for the Vancouver Giants. But you know what? It's not like there was a SkyTrain station near the PNE either. Driving to the PNE is a total pain in the ass, so it's you don't have to pay to park your car. You can take your family to a game at the LEC and you can get home at a reasonable time no matter where you live. And then what I touched on in the last answer about just the experience in and of itself, it's a more modern building. There's just a lot to like about it. So you're not going to, put it this way. I think I empathize and I sympathize with the fan who would love for the Giants to still be based in Vancouver. But I, for one, am damn happy with Langley and just selfishly the commute for me between, the practice rink in Ladner and then the game rink in Langley. For a lot of reasons, it just seems to work.
Yeah, as a guy living in White Rock, I love it. There's ample parking, like you mentioned, and I get that kind of family experience a little bit more from it. Just personally, and I want to ask a little bit about something at the LEC as well, because my very first WHL game was this year. I talked to you, got a media pass, was able to get into the game and watch a few of them this year, and the one thing that I loved when I saw at the rink was your dad, Dan. I don't think there's anybody with a bigger smile at the rink when you get here, so I'm curious, what's he been keeping busy with, because it seemed like he was busy with the Giants a lot.
Well, man, my dad is a podcast hero. Cam Hope, on our show, episode 20, he gave a shout out to my dad. Now you're doing it. He's my dad doesn't need a bigger ego. He's just gonna ham this up and love it. My dad, he's volunteered with the Vancouver Giants for a long time, and I know when we billeted, my family billeted for the Vancouver Giants for three seasons, 04, 05, 05, 06, and then 06, 07. And shortly thereafter, my mom and dad, they left Tawasin, and that's why they could no longer bill it. But my dad still wanted to stay involved, and once again, his name comes up again, but Dale Sipe, I think, kind of got on him and said, hey, like, we'd still love to have you around at the rink. We'd love for you to stay a part of what we're doing. And then he became, you know, the media host. And when games were at the Coliseum, I mean, he would be up top in the scouts room, and he would hand stat packs to the media and to the scouts, and would be sort of a greeter and would make sure that everything was kind of humming along the way that it was supposed to upstairs. And then and he did that even when I was in Prince George. So infamously, I would come to games with the Cougars, and my dad would be volunteering for the Giants, yeah. but he'd wear a Cougar jersey underneath his jacket, and I'm sure he caught all sorts of heck from it. But oh, yeah. His line was always, "I'm a Giants fan unless they're playing the Cougars," you know, because he was supporting his son, which I appreciated. But no, I mean. Coming to the rink and seeing him down there, I mean, it certainly gives a bit of a twinkle, you know, to just to know that. I mean, obviously the Giants have had a real big impact for me in my life, but for him as well. And, you know, the friends that he's made and just the experiences that he's had, you know, volunteering with the team. And, you know, he's just one of many phenomenal volunteers. I think if you really want to get to the crux of junior hockey, I mean, it's you know, we're talking about my dad right now, but I mean, the Giants have a handful of them that have been doing it for a long time, who, you know, there's no job too big or too small. I don't think you can have, you know, one of the best junior hockey programs in all of the world without a handful of volunteers who just go above and beyond. And that just, I think, speaks to the leadership of the team, and just speaks to the importance of the Giants to a lot of folks. And as far as what's keeping my dad busy these days, he is a dog walker extraordinaire. On days when I have to go to the rink, my wife's a teacher, so she's at school every day. So my dad, you know, very loyally will take our dog Tulo for a walk every day, every afternoon, kind of a reason to get him out of the house for about an hour and enjoy the outdoors. So him and Tulo have a real bond. And, you know, he and I will go for walks, and we'll have the occasional dinner together. And, you know, I think he, like all of us, are just kind of waiting for hockey to return so that he can take his usual post back at the LEC.
Absolutely. I'm excited to see him there. I want to ask a little bit about the podcast now, The Voice and the Coach. You guys can find it on Twitter at @voice_coach_pod. Dan, why did you decide to start a podcast in the middle of a pandemic? I'll start with that.
So Mark Hollick was the coach of the Prince George Cougars for 2.5 years when I was up there. And so we became friends and remain good friends to this day. Last summer, so pre-COVID, we're having a beer at his house, and he was actually the one who said, like, you and I should start a podcast. And you, like, you've been there. You're kind of like, oh yeah, haha, sure, like nice thought, but probably not gonna happen. Yeah. And then you know, all of a sudden we get into the month of May, and, you know, things, you know, related to the pandemic and COVID aren't improving. They're only seemingly getting worse. And then it sort of becomes a thing where, you know, you've got some time on your hands. You're looking for a way to kind of channel your creativity a little bit. And, you know, a phone call with Mark, you know, I sheepishly brought it up to him, and I said, hey, remember that conversation about a podcast? Well, were you serious? And turns out he was absolutely serious. So as he tells the story, 2 days later, he's minding his own business. He gets a knock on his door, and there's me with a microphone and a you know, a recording kit and just all of these things that we'd need to record an episode. And I mean, we were very clear from the onset, like, this is a hobby, this is fun, this is something that, you know, we just want to do to keep ourselves entertained more than anything. And, you know, the Giants gave their blessing for me to pursue it kind of on the side. And, you know, you do one or two episodes. I mean, we had Scott Gomez on as one of our very first episodes because he and Mark had a connection. And I think, you know, you get five episodes in, you get 10 episodes in, and all of a sudden you start to find your stride a little bit. And, you know, I can honestly say, like, highlight number one for me during the pandemic was getting married on July 18th. But highlight number two, I think I can sincerely say, I mean, the podcast has been a real cathartic, really, really important part of my life. Just in the fact that it's a reason to network. It's a reason to communicate. It just allows us. You know, we love hockey because of the game and the stories therein, and to be able to tell some of those stories, to tell some of my own, but more importantly, to hear from others, you know, to hear, you know, about a goaltending coach, you know, become, you know, the second ever African-American coach to ever hoist the Stanley Cup, or to, you know, to talk baseball with Dan Shulman, or racial equality with Wacy Rabbit. I mean, these aren't things that just happen every day. And so when you have the opportunity to go down these paths and have these conversations, it's been a real game changer for me, and something that I've really been grateful for, as it's, you know, Mark and I have had a lot of fun with it, and we're getting some good feedback, which we really do sincerely appreciate.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure for myself to enjoy. Like I was mentioning to you, I got a decent drive to get to the girlfriend's house every day, so I rely on podcasts very hard, and yours is definitely in the rotation now. I've been tuning in pretty hard over the past couple of weeks. Dan, I wanted to, you saw the tweet, I think, that I sent out asking some questions. We got some questions from Twitter, but before that, I have a couple that I wanted to ask you that are just kind of off the topic a little bit, but in a similar way, because the first one, I find it amazing, and I hear it on your podcast so much, the ability that you have to recollect games that happened 5, 10, who knows, 15 years ago, it blows me away sometimes. So I'm curious if you can remember the most outstanding game you've ever seen a single player have. Like, I'm thinking of, like, what Ty Smith did last year with those 8 points in that one game. No matter what level it was, do you remember one game where you saw a player just do something just unbelievable in one game, whether it was points, fights, anything, really?
I do. I have one for you. The Memorial Cup Championship game, May 2013, Halifax Mooseheads, Portland Winterhawks. All of the talk that season was Seth Jones. He was going to be the number one overall pick. This 6'4" defenseman from Texas commits to the Portland Winterhawks. And for the record, Seth Jones is a wonderful hockey player.
Yeah.
His Winterhawks, coached by Travis Green, end up in the Memorial Cup final that year in Saskatoon against the Halifax Mooseheads, who had an incredible team. Zach Fekale was in goal, Jonathan Drouin, Martin Furk, and a fellow by the name of Nathan MacKinnon. And in that championship game, if my memory serves correctly, Halifax won the game 6-5. And if Nathan MacKinnon didn't have 6 points in that game, I'm certain he had 5.
Wow.
And I remember, like, I attended the championship game live. I was vacationing in Saskatoon at the time and had tickets. And I just remember thinking, going in, like, Seth Jones arrived at the Memorial Cup as the soon-to-be number one overall pick in the draft, and I think Nathan MacKinnon left the Memorial Cup as the number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. You know, the old adage of great players pick the greatest moments to truly leave their mark. Nathan MacKinnon had a championship game for the ages. Every single time he was on the ice, he did something positive. I'll never forget watching Nathan MacKinnon for the Halifax Mooseheads in the Memorial Cup final that year.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I had to Google it here quick, And yeah, 3 goals, 2 assists, but the last one was an empty netter that he wasn't a part of. So you were pretty much bang on with that.
Yeah.
And I'm just seeing some of the names on this list as well. It's crazy to see how many players Nick Petan's in that game. You know, a couple other guys. Yeah, Seth Jones, like you mentioned. Wow, like what a...
Derek Pouliot was there. Ty Ratty was an unbelievable goal scorer for the Portland Winterhawks. I mean, the defense alone for the Winterhawks is one of the best defense cores I've ever seen in junior hockey. And, yeah, it was a pretty spectacular game and a spectacular end to the tournament.
Absolutely. And my second question for you before, like, I'm being a little greedy here and getting my questions in first before Twitter, but the second one I have is more specific to the Vancouver Canucks a little bit, because they have a player in Victor Persson, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago through text. He's going to be joining the Kamloops Blazers as soon as the WHL season is starting. He's currently playing in a J20 Swedish league overseas right now. I'm wondering, what do you think is going to be the hardest part for a guy like him to transition from a J20 Swedish league to the WHL?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that the import draft is a real riddle, and it's a real maze, because honestly, you do the import draft, and I mean, like, sometimes you pick a player. Like, I'm pretty sure when Prince Albert selected Leon Draisaitl in the import draft, I think they had it on pretty solid authority that you're getting a player that can change your franchise. More often than not, though, the import draft, it's a dart throw. Honestly, you're throwing a dart at a wall and you're hoping something sticks and hits. So the Giants, I mean, you look at some of the imports that they've had, you know, Mario Bliznak and Michael Repik and Milos Roman, Andre Mazeros, Marek Schwartz, Marek Tverdin. Like, there's also been some misses. And so when it comes to Victor Persson and the Kamloops Blazers and this Swedish defenseman, I mean, I would say the biggest thing that he can do, and probably just a memo to Canuck fans, is to, like, understand that it's really hard for anybody to just come to the WHL and just shut down and dominate. He's going to a great team, a team that, put it this way, I mean, they've got great depth at all positions. So it's not like he's going to Kamloops and is going to be told, like, okay, we need you to play 40 minutes a game and play in all situations and go quarterback our power play. And oh, but while you're at it, make sure you shut down Tristan Nielsen and make sure he doesn't score any goals. I'm sure that with the way Sean Clouston and Matt Bardsley have that team constructed, they're going to just tell him, look, come on in, just figure out what your role is here and just be one of the guys. And for him, like, I think a success for a defenseman like that, you know, play in the top four, you know, show well when your team has the power play, prove that you can defend, prove that you can be trusted. And also, like, in as much as fans need to kind of temper expectations a little bit, it's also going to be on him to understand that the WHL is the best junior hockey league in the world, I think. And it's not like he's going to just waltz right in and dominate the league and have it come easy for him. By all accounts, I mean, he's drafted to the NHL for a reason. There's obviously upside there. And I think for him to, you know, come to North America, for him to be, you know, a 3-hour drive away from Vancouver, he's going to be within arm's reach of the development staff and the scouting staff. I would certainly, you know, based on the success that I think the Kamloops Blazers are going to have, he's going to be a big part of that, and I would expect for him to be an impact player on that team.
Absolutely. That Kamloops team, I got to see them once last year at the LEC, and they were exciting just to think of them then. And those young players getting a year older, that's going to be a nasty team they got this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at them on paper and you look at the Giants on paper, I mean, you're probably looking at two teams that fully expect to be at the top of the BC division. And, you know, the Giants have had some great rivalry games with Victoria and Kelowna over the years. The Giants haven't played Kamloops in the playoffs. I want to say maybe back in 2004 they met in the playoffs. I mean, they haven't met in the playoffs very often. I think that might change. I think that was going to change in 2020. I fully expect that to be the case in 2021.
Should be a lot of fun. I'd love a playoff series. I'm getting to watch Canucks prospects, so we'll see about that. I'm going to change one of these questions. I'm going to change a couple of these questions a little bit. Just for you, since you're an employee of the Vancouver Giants, aside from the Vancouver Giants, are the Kelowna Rockets the model franchise of the WHL over the past 20 years? If not, who is? And that's from at 789012ANY.
That is a really difficult Twitter handle.
it's a phone number, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, yeah. You know what? The Kelowna Rockets, to their credit, have done a wonderful job. I mean, you look at the championships that they've won, the success that they have had, the... You know, the team success stands out definitely, but you look at then the players that have come out of that program who are mainstays in the NHL. I mean, they've got as long a list as any, especially active NHLers. Are they the gold standard in the WHL? I mean, I'm going to be a bit of a politician with this answer, and I'm going to say that they're one of them. The other two that come to mind that I think deserve some consideration, the Portland Winterhawks have been the epitome of success. You know, I think about my 10 years in the WHL, and I don't think the Portland Winterhawks for a single year of those 10 have had a bad team. They've had some years and some teams where they're just an absolute juggernaut, and it's like, well, how the hell do you expect to beat these guys? And then you look at the guys from Portland that are in the NHL and that have gone on to play pro. I mean, I can't really say enough good things about the job, you know, Mike Johnston and his staff have done in Portland over the years. And then the other one that I don't like, the other one that really intrigues me, and I think there's going to be a bit of an adjustment now, totally not necessarily on a lot of folks' radars, but it's hard to argue with their success, is the Brandon Wheat Kings. Now, with Kelly McCrimmon selling the team and removing himself from that equation, it'll be curious to see if that franchise kind of takes a different, you know, if they stumble a little bit or if there's a bit of a growing pains adjustment time. But, man, you know, I think about the players that have come from that program and some of the teams they've had in the past 10 years, you know, Michael Ferland and Mark Stone and Ivan Provorov, just to name a few. Nolan Patrick.
Not bad.
I mean, they've turned out some phenomenal NHL players and just good people to boot from that. Dave Lowry is the coach there, and I'm a big fan of his and just the job that he has done. And there's one WHL rink where I've never called a victory. In 10 years of calling games, Brandon is the only place, the only rink where I've never won. So I'd like to change that someday.
Most definitely. Next question here from at Canucks 43. This is from Laura. I know she's a big Giants fan. I've seen pictures of her at the Giants games. Big Canucks fan as well. Her question is, have you discovered any new hobbies or skills during the pandemic? And Dan, I'm going to put this one on a little bit of a mix on the question. You can't say cooking, because that's what everyone's saying.
Oh, well, so my answer was going to be... like, again, not to get too off track, I'm not a big egg guy. I'm very fussy, in fact, when it comes to eating eggs.
Yeah.
But for the past 2 months, almost every single Sunday, I've started making omelets. Mm. And
I think it's just a way to maybe score some brownie points with my wife. She's grading her high school papers at the desk, and I'm just kind of thinking, okay, like, what can I do to get me a hall pass to go and watch football all day? So I usually get up on Sundays and I'll make breakfast, and almost, I don't know, man. I think I've got natural talent when it comes to creating omelets. I don't like eggs, but I like my omelets. So that'll be one. The podcast would be the other one, which we've touched on. And the third thing is doing my very best with mixed results to really try and keep physical fitness a top priority. Right. Back in June of 2019, I started a fitness blog where I committed to losing 50 pounds in 52 weeks. And depending on the day, I'm anywhere from about 35 to 38 pounds of the way there. So keeping the weight off during a pandemic has had its challenges because, you know, some days you know, today, in fact, has not been a very healthy day, just a lot of poor food choices and what have you. But so it's really just been trying to keep physical health at the forefront, because with physical health, I think, comes strong mental health. And that's been really key during, you know, the yo-yo time of COVID and the ups and downs that have accompanied it.
Yeah, most definitely. And I want to go back to the omelets, Dan, if you're okay with this.
Sure.
So you mentioned that you don't like eggs, but you love the omelets that you've been making. So I'm curious, is there like an underrated ingredient that you're putting in there? Like, is there, I don't want to call it a topping because you're putting it inside of it, but is there something that's underrated or something that you use that nobody else maybe uses in an omelet that they need to try?
Well, I will eat eggs when they're masked with lots of other things to take away from the egg component of the dish. So, I mean, my go-to probably, like, if I were going to try and impress you with an omelet, I would do two eggs with some freshly fried bacon. So, like, pre-fried bacon. Would throw in, like, not sure what your stance is, but one of my favorites is to put some spinach, mushrooms, bacon and feta cheese and some cherry tomatoes, so almost like a Greek style omelet.
Excellent.
Served with two hash browns, a little bit of salsa on top, and then like some freshly grated cheese over the top.
Sounds good. We're gonna see that at a concession for a Sunday game here for the Giants. It's gonna be called the O'Connor. You're gonna be able to get your own omelet, I guess, coming up soon. We'll get to the final question now. This is from @TerryGuest29. And I'm going to change his question as well. Favorite Giants player of all time and why? And I want to get your opinion on the ice and off the ice.
Oh, my. Whew. Okay, so favorite. Well, okay, my side answer to that question is Mitch Seiber and Stuart Thiessen, because they were the two that billeted with me and my family. And if I don't say them, I'll get shit from it for days. So those two, for family reasons, I'm going to throw them out there. Favorite Giant of all time. Oh, man. And I'm going to try and not, like, there's so many current players. I mean Bowen Byram being an obvious choice, and, you know, getting a chance to watch the likes of Ty Ronning and Tyler Benson, Darian Skio, you know, since I've been with them. My favorite Giant to watch and why? Trying my very, very best not to hum and haw too much on this one for you, but I am going to say my favorite Giant to watch of all time was Gilbert Brulé.
Fair. Good call.
And you know what? It might be a bit of a cop-out, but where I'm going with this is you talk to people who have followed this franchise closely. I think you know, for a myriad of reasons, his pro career maybe didn't pan out the way people expected it to. But Gilbert Brulé, I think, in so many ways was instrumental in really, like, his skill set, his heart, he was a major X factor in making the Giants a champion. You know, when he returned to the team in 05-06, and, you know, I think he led the Memorial Cup in scoring that year, even though the Giants didn't win it. I think he's probably to this day the most dominant player the Vancouver Giants have ever had. And that's saying something when you look at the likes of Evander Kane and, you know, Bowen Byram, Tyler Benson, Brendan Gallagher, Milan Lucic. But I don't know if the Giants have ever had a player who could single-handedly change the temperature of a game the way Gilbert Brulé could. And so he's going to be my favorite Giant ever for on the ice. Favorite Giant off the ice. And this is, man, there's so many. Like the thing about my job that this makes me feel so fortunate is that I've had the true, genuine pleasure of getting to know so many of these players over the years and sharing meals with them on the road and just having some really profound, neat conversations. But Ty Ronning for me is a guy who comes by his personality honestly. And so my first year with the Giants was 2017-18. That season, Ty Ronning became the Giants' first ever 50-goal scorer and the team's first ever 60-goal scorer. And that same season, he was the WHL Humanitarian of the Year. And, you know, like, player appearances and community outreach, it's a huge part of the fabric and the culture of junior hockey. And so many players that I've met over the years are really great people, and they do very well with outreach. Sometimes, though, it does take a little bit of coaxing, a little bit of prodding, and sometimes a gentle nudge to some players just to say, okay, guys, like, you're at this thing, just shake hands and do your thing. Yeah. Ty Ronning never needed any of that. He was the kind of guy who would just arrive at an event, and he just knew what was expected of him. Mm-hmm. And then he obliterated it, but not because he's a Ronning, and not because he's looking for adoration. Simply put, it's who he is.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget it. One of the coolest moments for me ever in junior hockey. The night he broke Evander Kane's record for goals in a single season, it was a home game. It was February 8th, 2018 against the Seattle Thunderbirds. The Giants won the game 2-1, and Ty Ronning scored both of those goals. The first one to tie the record, the next one in overtime. It's a call that you can still hear anywhere that there's a Vancouver Giants anything.
Yeah.
A terrible voice crack by the play-by-play broadcaster, but I digress. So the 48th goal, the record-tying goal, I completely pooched the call. I thought Davis Kosh scored the goal because it was Kosh who took the shot from the slot, and I was convinced that Kosh had scored the goal, completely not knowing that Ty Ronning was parked in front of the net and the puck went in off his ass. And so here I am, like, a crazily important goal for the Vancouver Giants and a history-tying goal, and I didn't even know that Ty Ronning had scored it until he led the flyby and Bill actually corrected me. So there I am, feeling like an absolute idiot. And then, sure enough, like, the hockey gods were smiling on me that day, and Ty picks off Jarrett Tischka, goes in, scores the overtime winner. It's one of the best, one of the most memorable goals I had the pleasure of calling. But then after the game, underneath, you know, we took photos of Ty with his two pucks. And he pulled me aside after that, and he gifted me goal number 48. He gifted me the puck, and the reason why he did that is he knows that I've got autographed baseballs. I'm not a huge collector, but I've got some autographed baseballs and a few signed hockey pucks that I'm very, very proud of. He knew this. He'd been to my office. He'd seen them. And so he wanted me to have that puck for my collection. And despite me insisting that he keep this record-tying puck, that he might want it one day and keep it as a keepsake for yourself or your family one day, he says, Dan, like, I'm not taking no for an answer. This puck is yours. I want you to have it. And that to me was just a, like, this kid's 20 years old, and you know, I'll just forever be grateful and taken aback for his generosity and just for that moment. It might not have meant a ton to him, but to this day, it meant a lot to me. And that is why Ty Ronning to me is one of my favorite Giants off the ice, as well as on it as well.
Must be pretty funny when you mentioned him about the play call on that one, then.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, like, thankfully, goal 49 gets a lot of the love and gets a lot of the play. Goal 48, I don't. The only person that probably remembers it is Ty and me. But no, I've watched the highlights back a couple of times, and every time I do, I'm like, Dan, you idiot. But to be fair, I mean, it's hard to tell from the highlight that the puck hit him, so they all count, I guess.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, Dan, I just quickly checked over on the recording here to see if we were at 30 minutes yet, and we're over an hour, so I think we'll wrap it up there. I really appreciate you coming on. I always say that some of the best interviews that I do are with people who talk for a living, so this has definitely lived up to that. I really appreciate you jumping on the show and kind of mixing it up a little bit. I know we talked about it. This, you know, normally we all do Canucks stuff, but this is Vancouver hockey, and this is something that I've enjoyed in the past year ever since moving to Vancouver. So appreciate your time a ton, and I'm curious about the podcast. Do you guys have a scheduled release date for episodes?
Not really. We are very much at the mercy of our guests and their availability, and also just kind of how punchy we're feeling in a given week. But we try to do one a week. Quite often it turns into about one every 10 or so days, but you know, we tweet every episode before they drop, and you know, again, we do our best. Obviously, with hockey getting set to start up again, it's a bit of a challenge. It's more of a challenge, I suppose, just to find the free time to do it. But no, we do our best to crank out at least one every, if not every week, every other week for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I've been excited. I've been loving it lately. Hopefully some other people enjoy it as well. And Dan, thank you very much for doing this. We're excited to see, and I guess more likely hear you January 8th when the WHL gets going again.
I've really enjoyed the conversation, Chris, as always, and to you and obviously your podcast and the job you're doing and just your pursuits. It's been really cool to follow, and you're incredibly talented. You've got a great head on your shoulders, and trust me, I've really enjoyed the conversation, and I look forward to having many more with you as we move along.
Absolutely, Dan. Appreciate this.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.